This is the Internet Report, where we uncover what's working and what's breaking on the internet and why. I'm Angelique Medina, and I'm here with my co-host, Archana Kesavan.
Hey, guys.
So lots of interesting stuff happened last week. So there was the tension between China and India, and this happened around the same time in which the India decided to ban around 59 Chinese-built apps, among which was TikTok.
Right. So it comes from, there was a military dispute wherein about 20 Indian soldiers were killed sometime in the middle of June. And following that, India decided to ban about 59 Chinese applications. And, you know, like you mentioned, TikTok was one of them. And
but there are a lot of users in India, or have been, that have been using TikTok, right? Something right. like more than 600 million downloads of the app. And then, of course, there was also other TikTok news that was also related to, you know, the political situation. And that was TikTok has pulled out of Hong Kong. TikTok is a Chinese company, but it's not available to users in mainland China. And now it's no longer available to users in Hong Kong. So some interesting news about, you know, how kind of the political situations in various countries are impacting what's available to users
right.
from a content consumption standpoint.
Right. And we might want to keep an eye open on how the U.S. is going to handle TikTok as well in the upcoming weeks. I saw something earlier this morning today that indicated that the U.S. is also considering shutting down TikTok because of growing concerns. So stay tuned for that.
And then, of course, I'm sure a lot of folks heard about the almost 2.5 hour GCP outage in US East 1, right? A couple of zones that were impacted.
So US East 1 is the South Carolina region.
Hmm.
It's not necessarily their most popular region. The Ashburn still is, but the US East 1 had especially services hosted in availability zones, two of their availability zones, which interestingly is almost 66% of that region. That particular region only has three availability zones, and two of them were out for, you know, more than 2.5 hours.
So that was B and C that went down?
C and D that went down.
C and D. Yeah. And yeah. And what's interesting is that, you know, I mean, the whole point of availability zones is that there's some separation in terms of, you know, whether it be connectivity or power. And when they later reported that it was a power outage that took this down, that was a little bit surprising because it suggests that they actually had shared resources and maybe, you know, redundancy is not, you know, maybe that's something you need to factor in or think about if you're building out a redundant architecture.
Right. I think the whole concept of availability zones, right, and how every provider lays them out can be unique. And yeah. One of the things that we discovered in our annual cloud performance benchmark report, the 2019 report, is that there was some variation in terms of inter-availability zone latencies. And some regions when GCP or Alibaba Cloud were really small. So it always raises that question when you think about availability zones as to how distinct are they from a resource consumption perspective? Yep. Are they physically separate? Or are they just different floors within a data center, right?
Right. Yeah, you definitely want to be asking those questions because, to your point, I think there's a lot of assumptions that the way that the cloud providers work is somewhat uniform, right? So when somebody says they have an availability zone in one cloud provider, maybe that's handled differently in a different cloud provider. And the same on in terms of networking constructs, which is actually what we're going to talk about today. We have a great guest, Atif Khan from Alkira. And one of the things that he talks about is just the difference in the networking constructs between the providers. So always good to understand how your specific cloud provider operates.
Right, totally. And talking about outages, I think Slack released a more in-depth root cause analysis of an outage that took place in May. I think May 12th, Slack had almost a 45-minute outage starting at 4:45 Pacific, so towards the end of a business day. But that kind of took down, you know, connectivity to Slack and was kind of a global blast radius of the outage. So you can read the detailed analysis, but in short, it turns out that there was a bug in their load balancing infrastructure, which kind of derailed a sync between their proxy and their web app tiers that, you know, affected the platform, and pretty good write-up there.
Yeah, it's a great write-up and kind of details how, you know, effectively the mapping was not, you know, properly working at the time, and that even though, you know, the application itself was up and running, the assignment of instances was malfunctioning, and because of that, you know, users weren't able to use, many users weren't able to use the service.
We actually go through this outage in depth in our in episode 8. So, you know, if you're interested in that, feel free to check that out as well.
Yeah, great. I mean, you know, overall, like from an outage standpoint, and just in looking at, like, for example, network outages last week, they were down overall. So we're starting to see numbers that are closer to what we saw in February, which is good. Although, you know, outages are kind of a fact of life if you're operating a network, and particularly a large network. And we did see last week that Comcast had pretty notable outage that took place on July 4th during peak usage hours in the evening. And this impacted multiple regions in the United States, so central, east, and west. And that's what we're going to take a look at next.
The extent of the outage, Angelique, as you were saying, it originated, started out in like the Midwest and then spread across to the east and the western regions.
Yeah, that's right. So it started around or just after 5 p.m. Pacific time. So this would have been, you know, I guess like 3 p.m. 7 p.m. Chicago time. Right. So 7 p.m. Chicago time, you know, we see that their infrastructure is impacted in Chicago. So this is their backbone.
More of their backbone with the iBone in there, right? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. But what's interesting is that it's not contained to Chicago. You know, a few minutes later, we see that now the impact has kind of expanded. Okay. So the first, you know, 10 minutes or so is Chicago. And then, oh, here we go. Okay. So first 5 minutes Chicago, and then we see New York, we see San Jose, and we see Seattle as well pop in. So this then kind of just persisted for some time. I mean, this was like a 30-minute outage. Yeah. And again, you know, we're talking about really important kind of peering points or transit points, New York, you know, San Jose, and so on, and then just kind of continued on, you know. And this is, you know, regardless of which time zone you're in, this is probably something that you would have noticed, you know, assuming you weren't out, like, watching fireworks or something like that, in which case maybe you wouldn't have. But, you know, pretty notable outage, not only for its length, but also just for the number of locations that were impacted. And an outage like this is typically caused by either a misconfiguration or something that's impacted the control plane. You know, it's not like a router just died, right? Because it's multiple locations. So, you know, I haven't seen anything on this from users or from Comcast. So, you know, it would be interesting to see if anybody else noticed it and if Comcast had anything to say about that. So that's kind of the highlight from this week in terms of an interesting outage that we caught. So that was our notable outage last week. We talked a little bit about resiliency, given what happened with Google last week in terms of multiple availability zones within a particular region going down. Also with the IBM cloud outage, it's been a topic that's come up a few times over the last several episodes. We had Jason Black from Uber come on a few episodes ago to talk about their resilient cloud architecture and the strategy that they have. So we thought we'd continue this conversation and invite Atif Khan, who is the CTO of a multi-cloud networking startup called Alkira. Atif is also the, previously was the founder or one of the founders of Viptela. So he has a lot of background in enterprise networking and works with a lot of enterprises to help them kind of implement a very flexible kind of agile networking strategy with their cloud providers. So we're really excited to have him on, and that's up next. Thanks, Atif, for joining us.
Glad to be on the show. Thank you for having me, Nancy.
So what about traditional enterprises when they are contemplating moving to the cloud or maybe even some kind of hybrid or multi-cloud strategy? First of all, why would they do that? What are sort of some of the drivers for embracing multi-cloud for an enterprise?
You know, that's a very good question, Angelique. So there are multiple reasons why enterprises are adopting multiple clouds. One is like pretty simple and straightforward, where, you know, each cloud is different from what they offer. Right. So in certain cases, one cloud offers something which the other cloud doesn't offer, or your application in one cloud runs better, or one cloud is more suitable for a certain type of application than the other. So so you choose the cloud based on that. Secondly, cloud redundancy is one of the major factors as well. The third reason which we're seeing out there, some of the large enterprises which we are working with, especially what they started with one cloud, mm-hmm. but they ended up acquiring some companies which happened to be in different clouds, and then they just instantly became multi-cloud companies. Mm-hmm. So there are different reasons, and redundancy, as you said, resiliency, redundancy, high availability, all of that is one of the key reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're moving towards these type of deployments. Maybe they've inherited this because of an acquisition. Maybe they simply need to do that because they want to use some services in some of the cloud providers, or just for resiliency purposes. Now, you know, I know, for example, that a lot of the cloud providers have very different networking constructs. So Google is very different from, say, Azure or AWS in terms of like how the regions work and how you would kind of connect between across different regions. And even if you're just working within one cloud provider, you may be working across different availability zones and across different regions. So what are some of the challenges that you see enterprises encounter when they start to contemplate moving to the cloud?
When you connect to multiple clouds, each cloud is very different from when it comes to, as you said, when it comes to the underlying networking construct. You as an enterprise or enterprises, they have to learn, or they have to have staff which knows, which have expertise in each of these clouds, or they have to build expertise in each of these clouds. Just building that expertise takes time. And nowadays, cloud network is just an extension of your private network. So it's not different from your on-prem or your private network. It's just extending into the cloud. So you have to be able to run and manage your cloud network similar to the way you're managing and running your private network. So you have to make sure that when you deploy your cloud network, it's deployed in a resilient fashion, it's highly available, and you have complete visibility into what's going on into the cloud, across clouds, on-prem to the cloud, cloud to internet. So you have to have visibility is like one of the key aspects of deploying is one of the key requirements. And then you have to be able to manage and control from routing perspective, from the routing policies perspective, from in general, the traffic policies perspective, your cloud, the way you control your on-prem networks.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I was talking to somebody who he helped effectively roll out the cloud deployment for a large healthcare provider. And he had mentioned that it was really kind of an evolution, their rollout. You know, they moved to the cloud, they started deploying, and then, you know, they kept kind of going down architectural cul-de-sacs where they realized like, oh no, we can't scale that way, or oh no, like that's not going to work, you know, and then having to make changes.
You know, cloud networking is not just about like connectivity or providing connectivity into the each of the clouds, right? So sometimes that's the easier part of the whole thing. It's also about like making sure that you secure the network. You move your, maybe in certain cases you move your security services into the cloud as well. Maybe there are requirements where you need to move your other services into the cloud as well. Being able to deploy all of this based on the use cases, because each use case has like different requirements from what is required from the network perspective as well. So to give you an example, there might be use cases where traffic is going from on-prem to the cloud. There might be use cases where there is traffic between clouds or within even one cloud, but between different regions as well. Or there might be a use case where there's traffic which is coming in from the internet and it's going into the cloud. Your servers or your applications might be sitting inside the cloud. So you might need like different types of services to front-end the cloud based on the use cases. Sometimes there are certain things which are very hard to accomplish. And again, giving you a quick example, if you have stateful, let's say a firewall, which you're putting in front, if you have a use case where traffic needs to go through a firewall and then hit your destination or your wherever your application is sitting, you might have a requirement where you need to auto-scale your stateful services. In certain cases, you need to make sure that the traffic flows are symmetric. And the services scale up and down based on the capacity requirements or the load through those services. So all of that adds to the complexity. So if you can do all of this in a simple manner in across clouds, then that helps enterprises a lot. Basically, as an enterprise, you don't have to worry about the underlying limitations of the cloud provider's infrastructure, because you know, like as a customer of these clouds, every time you spin something up in the cloud from a networking perspective, you have some limitations which are imposed on you. Maybe those are number of routes or some bandwidth limitations. Then you have to take care of all of your deployments as far as, let's say, if you're going between different regions, like inter-region routing, and if you have multiple clouds and inter-cloud, all of that routing, segmentation. And nowadays, like these networks are global in nature.
Yeah, and you can't manage what you can't see. So visibility is so critical, especially if you're in the cloud. You don't know what kind of performance you get unless you validate, you know, that you're getting what you need, for example. So it's just important that even though it's not your infrastructure, you're still using it, you're still responsible for it. So you should know what you're getting. Really appreciate you coming on to the show. This was really fascinating, pretty new area. So glad you could share some of your thoughts on this with our audience.
Angelique, that was a really great interview. What did you take away from, you know, your discussion with Atif and that you think, you know, would be worth sharing?
Yeah, what was really interesting was how Atif talked about really being thoughtful about your specific use case. You know, you may have different requirements depending on, business unit, depending on where users are coming from. So maybe you have traffic that's coming into a cloud provider and you might need to think about security in a particular way, like a firewall or maybe a load balancer, but maybe not have those requirements for inter-app connectivity. Really thinking about your deployment beyond just connectivity and all of the different services that you might need and the performance requirements that you have, because they're going to vary depending on what your use case is. So really trying to map your use case so that you're not over architecting and you're being thoughtful in terms of the resources that you're using. So that was really interesting. You know, it's always about the use case at the end of the day, you know, and context is kind of everything.
All right. So that's all we have for this week. Don't forget to subscribe, which will get you a free t-shirt by emailing internetreport@thousandeyes.com with your address and size. Also, registration is open for the State of the Internet, and that's coming up on July 16th, which is next Thursday. So we have a lot of amazing speakers there. Fastly, David Belton from the Internet Society, Verizon, and then we have Angelique too. Angelique's going to be actually talking about some really interesting data in terms of how the internet's been performing over the last few months. So don't forget to sign up for that. And with that, we will see you next week.